Well, having said that now, I'd like then to go more deeply into it. The fact, I think, is easily proven. But what I want to do with you now is take you through the Gospel and look at six portraits of Jesus. I'll try to do it prayerfully, and you do your own praying as you contemplate the scenes that I put before you, if you wish. And I've selected the six portraits out of many, many, many beautiful ones that I could to enable you to concentrate with me on a particular aspect of love, because love is a multi-dimensional thing, and I want to say six things about it, that's all, with you tonight. The first scene, which I shall read, and you can listen and imagine it if as best you can, is in Mark chapter 1, verse 40 to 45, and you can also find it in the early part of Matthew and Luke. And it's the scene where Jesus meets a leper. I'll simply read it as Mark puts it before us. It's a portrait. So watch it and watch the brush strokes and watch the colour of it and try yourself with me to just look at him. Don't let me distract you if I am. Kind of try and look at the picture and imagine what they thought of Jesus loving and what they learnt about love by watching it. It reads like this. A leper came to Jesus and pleaded on his knees. If you want to, he said, you can cure me. Moved with compassion for him, Jesus stretched out his hand and embraced him. Of course I want to, he said. Be cured. And the leprosy left him at once, and he was cured. Jesus immediately sent him away and sternly ordered him, mind you say nothing to anyone, but go and show yourself to the priest. Make the offering for your healing prescribed by Moses as evidence of your recovery. So the man went away, but then started talking about it freely and telling the story everywhere, so that Jesus could no longer go openly into any town, but had to stay outside in places where nobody lived. Even so, the people from all around would come to him. Well, let's leave the secondary parts of it and just you imagine a leper and imagine Jesus embracing a leper and imagine him simply saying to him and move with compassion, of course I want to heal you. And he reaches out and takes this poor man who hasn't been embraced by anyone for a long time and kind of puts life into him. A leper, all those around would have been shocked. All those around would have shielded their eyes initially. They would have stepped back for a whole lot of reasons. Fear, because they were afraid of lepers, aren't we all? And the leper was supposed to be put away by law, by God's law in Leviticus chapter 13, so that everybody said. The priest, the local priest, had the job of diagnosing the leprosy and then bringing down, like a magistrate as it were, a judgment of law on this man who would have to leave his family, his wife, his farm and whatever, and go out into places where nobody lived, where he would only see other lepers, where he would not ever see his wife and family again, where he would have no hope, no future, live in solitude apart from his own kind. And you can imagine what that did to this man's psyche. And it was done in God's name in their culture. Not only was he a leper, but God said that he had to be put out of the town. So they thought. So it was said. So it is in the book. And yet this man saw Jesus somehow, sensed something in him. What is that something? The word I'm trying to capture with you at the moment is the word compassion, because that's the word that Mark captures. He sensed that Jesus, a holy man, would somehow not do what every other holy man was bound to do by law, because the leper's untouchable by law. A holy man should have stood back, because he was being punished by God, that man, And no one could interfere with the judgment of God on that sick, lonely, desolate, and obviously, people would say, sinful man. And so everyone steps back. Jesus, like the father of the prodigal son, moves forward. And moved with compassion, gets rid of Leviticus chapter 13 in one big sweep of his arm and takes hold of this bloke and loves him. And is presenting a revelation, a veil falling away, if you want to look. A veil is falling away from people's eyes because they thought God wasn't like that. And in fact, everyone taught them that God wasn't like that. And it's as important as the law that God isn't like that. And yet God is like that. There's something, love is transforming this whole scene, and, well, we've got a movement of compassion that Jesus had for him. The Greek word is important to mention because the Testament is written in Greek, and for what it's worth, the word is actually splankna, is the name, the noun from which this is derived, and it means the interior organs. It includes the heart and the liver and whatever else is in there, and the pancreas, I suppose, and the whole inner kind of knotted entrails of a man, as it were. And it's that movement that happens when we use a rather abrupt English expression, we say he had a gut reaction. And I think we're talking about something real. And you know how sometimes you might love someone, but it's all terribly nice and as cold as charity, as people used to say. Terrible expression. But not so Jesus. He clearly was bodily moved. A problem arises here to me, and I'll share it with you, and then give you my own thoughts as to solution to it as far as I can anyhow. People sometimes say that you can't really understand something that you haven't actually experienced. How would I understand what it was like to be blind? And I think that's true, isn't it? To a great extent, unless you're blind, you can't understand it. At the same time, there's a rather strange thing here that my reflections on anyhow are these, that in a way, if a person is born blind, they don't understand blindness, do they? Because they don't know what it is to see. I mean, is that obvious to you? It seems obvious to me. You don't understand blindness because you can only understand blindness if you know what it would be to see and what you haven't got by not seeing. The whole range of what sight is that you and I have the privilege of having is unknown to a person born blind. So in a way, I hope I'm not playing with words there, it's not as simple as to say that if you don't experience something, you don't understand it. I think, on the contrary, if these thoughts strike you, only a gentle person understands violence. If you're violent, and to the extent that you're a violent person, you obviously don't know what violence is, or you couldn't be violent. You are being violent, you're experiencing being violent, but you're not experiencing what violence is, or you couldn't cope with it. You just don't understand. You're trampling on people without recognizing that you're doing it. Is it true that only a humble person understands pride? I think so. The people that come to me, say, as a priest in confession and talk about being proud, and if you happen to know them, sometimes you do, it's in a one-to-one relationship, and, well, anyhow, it's just a simple fact without breaking the seal of confession to assure you that as a priest you constantly get absolutely nonplussed by all this because the really humble people are confessing being proud. And they're right. Because they're just so humble that a movement of pride, they pick it up like that, whereas I don't even see it. I can be proud without noticing until it gets to a fairly heavy degree that bonks you on the head and you can hardly miss it. Only the pure in heart understand what it's like to be impure. this sensitivity is so tuned. I think I'm trying to lead to this point. Jesus was sinless. And so we might be tempted to say, and I have heard people say, and because of what they said, I had to reflect on it myself, and I'm simply sharing this reflection with you, that if Jesus was sinless, he didn't really understand what it was like to be like me. And I think, on the contrary, he was being sinless. He was so sensitive to the slightest movement of sin, being on the track, as it were, in love with the Father, and himself in love, he realized the terrible nature of being off it, like no one else could possibly know it. Being innocent, he knew what it was like. He could see what was being lost by sin. Thomas Aquinas has a lovely thing that is well worth constantly reflecting. He says, the worst effect of sin is that we lose our natural propensity to the good. The innocence of the child, the innocence of whoever, and please remember that innocence can be regained, that's what we're going to say again tonight too in later scenes, through forgiveness. But if you have been innocent, and you all have, and if you have regained your innocence, which please God you all have, then I think I don't have to say any more about what I'm saying, for you to know that you then know what's gone wrong when you haven't been, like you didn't know when you were lost. The Jesus of the Gospel, the only Jesus the people who lived with him knew, is a Jesus who's described like this in the letter to the Hebrews, for example, which is one of the most human and close and intimate statements, as well as one of the most magnificent statements of Jesus in the New Testament. Let's read that together. Check your own consciousness. Try and see the man there who's embracing the leper. And let's be open to believe that whoever wrote that letter, that's what he's talking about. It was appropriate, he said, that God should make perfect through suffering the leader who would take them to their salvation. And the word he's using is of the one who's the scout in the desert, who is going through the desert to find the oasis. He knows the way. He has a scent. He kind of knows the path. But he still has to go through the desert. He hasn't got a helicopter. He's still got to get on a camel and go through and be thirsty and be hungry. He will not miss his way because he's got a true heart. Fix your heart on God first, and he fixes his heart, so the direction is sure. But the journey is no less painful and no less difficult for Jesus. He had to learn through suffering so that we would understand that if he's making his way through the desert and he's like us, then there's a possibility of us making our way through the desert. Chapter 2, verse 18, that was 2:10 there. Because he has himself been through temptation, trial, testing, all those words are accurate for the Greek, he's able to help others who are tested, tempted, tried. That's simple, but you know, just fix your mind on it, because it's, I mean, we've got to be very careful when we kind of take that through to its logical conclusions, because there are temptations that I have that Jesus never had. And I don't mean by that that he was any less human than I. I think he was more human and therefore didn't have them. Because I have temptations, because, and so do you, I presume, if I'm the only one here, will you let me know later? But some of my temptations are because I have gone wrong, huh? And if you go in a wrong direction, you can be tempted to go again, can't you? It comes easier the second time, as it were. So we're often tempted by having tasted the fruit, as it were. That kind of temptation clearly Jesus never had, because he didn't ever go wrong. But the trials, the testing, the all that we go through, except sin and its consequences, Jesus tasted. Chapter 4, verse 15. He is not incapable of feeling our weaknesses with us, because he's been tempted in every way that we are, though he is without sin. I just want to stress that as we watch him with the leper. He certainly wasn't incapable of understanding what it was like to be a leper. No, he wasn't a leper physically. But we can transfer our feelings and we can understand what it's like to be an outsider. Who has been an outsider in this world more than Jesus? Look at his final position where he was excommunicated from the religious group that he belonged to and denied by his followers, cast out of the city and crucified in the name of God. If that's not an outsider, God, what is? And condemned as a false prophet and a heretic. Jesus knew, we're told. He understood the leper like nobody else understood him, and like none of the other lepers understood him, and like he didn't understand himself. He was quite capable of feeling that with him. And finally, I don't need to go on, I'm sure, Hebrews 5, 7 to 8, during his life on earth, Jesus offered up prayer and entreaty aloud and in silent tears to the one who had the power to save him out of death. Although he was son, he learned to obey through suffering. And so to just conclude this meditation on the leper, where did Jesus get his compassion from? Why was he able to say, of course I want to? Why was he able to feel so much for that lost, isolated man there? And why was his love able to stir his whole body and psyche and make him just absolutely incapable, you might say, of doing anything but embrace him and love him? The New Testament gives us the answer. Jesus, in his own parable of the parable we all love, the parable of the prodigal son, when he just gives his own simple image of God, an image that was refreshing, simple, straight, his image is that father who has the two sons. And he describes the story, as I'm sure you know it, of the young fellow that got half his possessions, half his heritage, and then went out and wasted it all, and finally ended up in a pig yard, which was his own creation, and was going nowhere, and then he remembered his father, and he remembered this beautiful man back there in his home, whom he never doubted would forgive him, never doubted would accept him, and just had this simple image of the father. And he comes back, and just as when he's a long way off, we're told his father saw him and was moved with compassion, and then ran out to the boy and embraced him and celebrated life with him. Point I'm making with you is a simple one. Jesus was compassionate because he believed his father was compassionate. He knew the compassion of his father for him. He knew that the father cared for him, and therefore that, as it must, the love of God, which is a love of compassion that flowed through Jesus at his times when he needed it, and he needed it all the time, enabled him to understand what it was like when you knew that someone loved you with compassion, what it did for you, and so he wanted to do that for others. I think that's a simple way of putting it. And in turn, when he speaks to us about his life, and this is a different word in the Greek now, but in English it sounds the same and it's related. He says, be compassionate as your father is compassionate. And that word, rather than coming from the word for the splankna, actually comes from a Greek word which translates the Hebrew word for the womb, which is obviously in the same area, eh? But it's not so much now a movement of like knotted concern or so much, it's the feeling of the word there that a mother has for the child in her womb. It's a love-giving, life-giving compassion. It's a, in a way, a gentler word and a simpler word than the more urgent feelings that are described in the others. But either way, Jesus knew that God was compassionate. And so he was compassionate. I leave you then with that image to just come back to it for a moment, of Jesus with the leper, embracing him. Compassion has its price, doesn't it? And the price that Jesus paid for that action is in the text that I read you, where because of it he couldn't have gone to the synagogue for some, 40 days, I think it was. He wouldn't have been allowed near the synagogue. He had to go outside, we're told, in places where nobody dwelt. He was banished from the community because they're afraid, of course, simply that he may have picked up leprosy. That's a simple statement on a medical level. But on another level, he had contravened the will of God. And he had to take that judgment of other people, that he had broken the law by embracing a leper, and so was ostracized, as it were, till he repented. But we're told then, but that couldn't keep the people away from him. But still it says people would go after him.